All right, everybody. Welcome back to the Shante Rand Show, where love meets romance. And we are talking with our author, Cindy Valor, who wrote The Scottish Thistle. Cindy, are you with us?
Yes, I am.
Hi, Cindy. How are you?
Oh, I'm fine. How about you?
We're doing great today. Wonderful. So, Cindy, we have a lot to talk about tonight. First, I want to tell everybody how you and I met.
Okay.
So we met when I took an online historical fiction workshop because I love writing historical fiction. And you were the instructor, and you just blew me away with your knowledge of history and all of your ideas for research. And because when most people think about researching something, they go to Google or Wikipedia or something like that. But you had, like, so many sources. It was overwhelming. I was like, oh, my God, I love all this stuff. So tell our listeners, if you will, you know, what is historical fiction? And can you just let us know what types of historical fiction are out there right now on the market?
Sure. A general definition that most people would think of is that the story is set in the past.
Mm-hmm.
But if you want to be a bit more technical,
mm-hmm.
your characters either interact with someone who or some people who actually lived at a given time period,
mm-hmm.
or the story is such that you just get such a sense of the time period that
mm-hmm.
you feel like you're living there. Otherwise, it can also be that the characters are the participants in a historical event.
Okay, so you can write about real characters that existed back then, or you can write about fictional characters that may have met a real character back then or just had some knowledge of that character.
Right, right.
Okay.
Like Philippa Gregory does what we call historical biography of, like, the Tudor.
Yes,
queens.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I love her work. She's a really good historical writer, romance writer, too.
Mm-hmm.
So there's a lot of different types of historical fiction out there, like mystery, romance, time
right.
travel. There's a lot of different stuff out there. So when people think of a historical romance, they do think, oh, it's set back in jolly old England, you know. But it's more than that, right?
Right, there is. Historical fiction is, if it's mainstream, it's something that history propels the story,
mm-hmm.
whereas historical romance is the romance has to propel the story. That's just the definition of it.
Ah, okay.
I actually write historical fiction, but I include a love story in it. You cannot take the history out of my stories. Otherwise, you'd be really bored.
Okay, so where's the challenge then? Because, you know, you want to educate readers because, like, in The Scottish Thistle, your novel, it's
mm-hmm.
obviously set back in time
mm-hmm.
in Scotland.
Right.
And you want to let everybody know, here's what was going on with the clans back then. Here are the, you know, the fighting issues, the social issues that are going on. But you don't want to give too much, you know, history, or they'll think I'm in history class, right?
Right, right. The trick is, as an author, you learn to weave the facts into the fiction.
Mm.
Because you have to remember, the story has to take precedence. As a writer of historical fiction,
mm-hmm.
it's the story that matters. It's not the history. That's not to say that you can't, you have to get your facts right. You have to be able, as an author,
mm-hmm.
to feel as if you lived in and ate in and interacted in the time that you're writing in. I mean, my husband used to, when he'd come in and interrupt me while I was writing The
mm-hmm.
Scottish Thistle, he said he could actually see me going through the different centuries till I came back to the present. So, because I wouldn't talk to him before
that. Tell him that was wrong of him just to come in there and interrupt you when you were in your zone.
Well, yes,
okay.
I did tell him.
You know, so, but you make an interesting point about, you know, the story, you know, versus the historical facts involved. We had an author on a couple of weeks ago, Niambi Davis, and she talked about writing historical romance, and she wanted to be accurate so no one could come back and question her later and, you know, say, oh, this wasn't right, or this, you know, this is not what happened in that time period. So do you feel that pressure to get everything precisely right for the reader?
You do, but there's almost no author that can get it 100% right. Mm-hmm. Even Elizabeth Chadwick, who is one of the premier medieval historical novelists, will admit she tries her utmost, but every once in a while some little thing will crop in.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I'm not saying there aren't errors in the Scottish Thistle. First of all, I had to make sure the story took precedence. And in order for you to understand, as you read it, why Rory MacGregor is the type of person she is and why she does what she does, you have to know the history of Clan MacGregor and the persecutions they endured, which were far more than most clans ever did. And so what I did was I condensed a century or more of history into her early lifetime.
Okay.
But I do admit that in the afterword.
Okay. So do you include like an author's note at the end and say, you know, hey, by the way, this or this or this really happened, and, you know, in the book I kind of condensed it, or do you just let it ride?
No, I actually, if I change history, I let my readers know.
I like that.
And it's funny because I recently wrote an article for Solander Magazine, which is one of the journals that the Historical Novel Society puts out, and that's exactly what we were talking about. Should you use an author's note? What do you put into it? Does a reader want to know these things? And the general consensus is yes.
Yes.
If you took liberties with history, we want to know. And I also feel an important part of the author's note is that the reader wants to know what happens to the historical people.
Exactly. Because, you know, there's a difference between people who are buying a contemporary romance set in, you know, the present time versus a historical romance. And a lot of the times, you know, when I pick up a historical romance, I'm picking it up so I can learn more about that time period.
Mm-hmm.
So we want all those details, like you said, woven in, you know, with the story, with the romance and the passion, you know?
Sure.
Mm-hmm. So tell us about the Scottish Thistle. So who are the characters and what's their story? What's going on with them?
Okay. This is the background for the story. It's the rising of 1745, which is a time when the Hanoverian, the House of Hanover, rules England and Scotland.
Mm-hmm.
And they came to rule the United Kingdom because the previous kings had been the Stuarts, the Royal House of Stuarts, mm-hmm. and they were Catholic.
Mm-hmm.
And the English Parliament really did not want another Catholic king. So they invited a descendant of the James the First, who was a Stuart, and invited him to come over. And so by the time this story takes place, it's George the Second, I believe, who is king. But there are still royal Stuarts out there, one of whom is Bonnie Prince Charlie. And his father is still alive, and he wants to get his father back on the throne so that he eventually, of course, can become King Charles.
Gotcha. I can tell you're a historical writer, because even now, you just giving me the background is giving me all the scoop I need to know to start it.
Well, see, most people, unless you're really into Scottish history, you haven't a clue what the Rising of 1745 was. But it's the last civil war that is fought in the United Kingdom.
Ah, okay. Okay.
Mostly in Scotland, but they do get into the England. It involves several Highland clans, but my story particularly focuses on two clans, the Camerons and the MacGregors. And I chose those two because the Camerons, their chief, who was Sir Donald Cameron of Lochiel, if he had not come out in support of Bonnie Prince Charlie, the Rising probably never would happen.
Mm-hmm.
So I thought that was an important part. Also, the Camerons are not a real well-known clan. They're very influential,
mm-hmm.
but they're very small. They're not like the Campbells. I mean, if you say the Campbells, everybody knows who you're talking about. But the Camerons, not so much. The MacGregors, as I said, were a very persecuted clan. And so that's why I decided that's where my characters were
mm-hmm.
come from.
Because there's a lot of tragedy involved in that, with the persecution
exactly.
and everything.
Exactly.
So who's the hero of your story?
the hero is Duncan Cameron. He is a bodyguard to Sir Donald Cameron of Lochiel. And as a warrior, he has to swear an oath to obey his chief.
Mm-hmm.
And he does so on his dirk or his knife.
Mm-hmm.
And if he should violate that oath, they can use that knife to cut his throat.
Oh, okay.
So
wow.
When the chief decides it's time for Duncan to marry, it's not that Duncan really wants to give up his life, so he agrees to
right, smart guy.
and meet this lady and marry her.
So he has to marry who they tell him to marry. He just can't pick his own bride.
He can, but that would be against the rules, and he could be banished from the tribe or from the clan. There could be some punishment, the most severe of which would be loss of life.
Well, that is a hell of a punishment there. Okay, continue on.
Okay, so the lady he's going to see is Rory McGregor. And she is a chieftain of the McGregors. A chieftain is just below a chief,
mm-hmm.
and there are many different branches of McGregors. She is the chieftain of a fictional branch.
Okay,
but
wait a minute. So I'm not trying to be sexist, but a woman could be a chieftain?
It's possible. It was very unusual, but it is possible.
But because she had fighting skills, though, right? You know,
she did. That was very unusual. But if you go back into Celtic history,
mm-hmm.
the women were trained in the art of fighting.
Gotcha.
And Rory's backstory is that she witnessed the brutal slaying of her mother
mm-hmm.
and the rape of her foster mother.
Oh,
and
yeah.
A destruction of the village where she lived.
Okay.
And her father felt that the only way to protect his daughter was to teach her the art of fighting. He also protects her by making an arrangement with the Cameron chief that he will choose who she marries.
Gotcha. Okay. So what do they think of each other when they meet, when Duncan and Rory meet? Is there an attraction? Do they hate each other?
No, there's an attraction, but she's suspicious as to why he's there. And when she learns the truth,
mm-hmm.
she is upset because she feels very betrayed
mm-hmm.
by her father. Because
oh.
her father has taught her to be a very independent person.
Right.
And, of course, she's got all these people she's responsible for.
Mm-hmm.
So when she finds out that she's supposed to give everything up for this guy, she is upset. She's not too into doing it.
Yeah, I
but
can't
then,
blame her.
Duncan feels that he cannot lie to her. He has to tell her something that she does not want to hear. And that has to do with a secret from his past. Not something he did, but something
in
about
his
mother.
But we can't let them know. We can't let the listeners know what it is. They have to read it to find out.
Right, exactly. But suffice it to say, it further antagonizes her willingness to marry him. And so she decides that because she must protect her people,
mm-hmm.
Because at this point in time, it's still perfectly fine to kill a McGregor not stand trial. So she feels to protect her people, if she marries Duncan,
mm-hmm.
her people can become Cameron's.
Gotcha.
Swear allegiance to Sir Donald and be perfectly fine and under his protection. So she agrees to hand fasting. That's marrying for a year and a day, or at least that's what I thought it was when I wrote the story. I've since
learned
a little different.
So if they don't like each other after that period, they could just, you know, split and it would be no big deal.
She can walk away, which is what she fully intends to do.
Wow.
Because it's not only hand fasting, but it will be a marriage in name only.
They should bring that back, Steph is saying. Yeah. Because, you know, you might want to try it out, like a trial period, you know?
I like that. You get a little sampler.
Right, exactly.
Well, that's what they do. And while this is going on, Sir Donald has his reasons for having chosen her to be Duncan's wife. And part of what she has to do, she has to get to learn, to meet all the different people in the Cameron clan. And while she's, right after she's done this, Mm-hmm. She also meets some of these people who are very superstitious, and they can see some of what she does as being witchcraft.
Oh my gosh!
Which has its own.
Yeah, that's a whole nother. Yeah, that's a whole nother.
Right.
Book industry.
When they come back, news comes that Bonnie Prince Charlie has landed, and that he's calling the clans to arms.
What does that mean? So he's telling them they got to get prepared to fight?
Yes, exactly. And because Sir Donald eventually agrees to fight for him, that means Duncan must go.
And fight. Okay, so let me ask you this, Cindy. So the $64 million question is, do they get busy in here?
Yes.
Okay,
but
all right.
Not until the end of the story. My colleague, where I worked in a special education facility, was reading this story mm-hmm. back long before it was published. Mm-hmm. And she said, Cindy, all you do is tease me all the way through. So, but it made her keep reading.
Ah.
And that's the important thing. I lead these things because it's not, as in any love story, mm-hmm. it's a gradual. Nobody just bang, bang, hits the wall and you're in love.
Right.
That's not the real.
You might be in lust, but
yeah,
you're not in love. Yeah, that's so typical of these historical romances. Like, oh my God, they're called bodice rippers. He saw her and he just fell madly in love with her. You know.
Well, see, that's the thing about romance. That's what a romance has to be. But in my story, the other thing is that it's very rare for the two characters, main characters, to be separated. But here we have a war,
mm-hmm.
and Rory is given a duty that requires her to be separated from her husband. And Duncan, of course, he has his duty. He must also be separated. So they have to make difficult choices that eventually pit mm-hmm. their honor and duty against learning to trust mm-hmm. and learning to love.
So how
and
long,
that's what the story's about.
How long did it take you to write the story? You say years, you know, it's been years.
Actually, yeah. It took me 12 years from the time I had the initial idea until I got published. And most of that was 10 years of research and writing mm-hmm. because this was my first story mm-hmm. and there was a lot about writing I didn't know. And
yes.
I had to learn it. Not the research for the history, mm-hmm. but how to write, because we can all write, but there's a good way to write and there's a bad way to write.
Oh, definitely, definitely.
Well, it sounds like, Cindy, I mean, all the time that you put into this book, you have so many components. You've got a man and a woman who's somewhat being thrown together, who's got the resistance. There's a lot of political things going on. Mm-hmm. They have to make these important decisions about war and so forth. And then eventually there's some point of a break mm-hmm. in emotions. Mm-hmm. So it just sounds like you have everything building up to a wonderful, exciting love story.
Yes, yes. So tell listeners where they can find you and where they can find the Scottish Thistle, where they can buy it or look at it.
You can find me at my website, which is www.cindyballard.com. It's called Thistles and Pirates, and it focuses on the Scottish side is thistles, the mm-hmm. maritime side that I do is on pirates, but when you go to my website, you can see pictures from Scotland because mm-hmm. I have been there, and it tells you some background about the story mm-hmm. that each picture has to do. You can read an excerpt from it, mm-hmm. and at the bottom of the page of all the excerpts, it tells you all the different places you can buy the book. There's a short story there if you want to read another one.
Mm-hmm. And you give a CD away also, don't you?
I'm sorry, what?
You give a CD away with the book.
I do. If you buy the book through me, I give you a CD that the Clan Cameron Association has put together. It tells you about the places in Cameron lands in Scotland mm-hmm. and the background of those lands and that type of stuff.
I think your site is just awesome. I mean, there's so much information on there, and you even have workshops on there. There was one in particular that I liked, and it was called the Age of Sail. So you obviously have some extensive knowledge of just boats and ships, rather, and maritime. And so you give an actual workshop that teaches people like the terminology you use with these ships and different people that they may have traded with during certain times in history. I think that was pretty awesome.
Right. In fact, that's what. We just started teaching that through Hearts Through History, which is an RWA online chapter. We're doing the Age of Sail, and it's a 2-month-long course. And I give them as much benefit of my nautical knowledge as I possibly can.
Yes, and it is quite extensive from looking at it. You even have a workshop about pirates, and you know, you compare it to, what is it, Pirates of the Caribbean, and you can see, right. is this Hollywood, or is this true? Did this actually happen? And there's just so much history for people that are interested in getting that knowledge.
Right, and the reason I started doing that, I mean, I've been writing about nonfiction. I've been writing about pirates for 10 years,
mm-hmm.
So I've kind of become a pirate historian and expert. And I review pirate books and maritime books. And in the reviewing, I was reading a lot of books where they get so many errors in their historical facts.
Wow. Yeah.
Well, you know, like, you really should not think of a pirate as being a good guy. There are ways to do it, but just a pirate is not a good person.
No,
he's a criminal.
Yes.
And so I decided I needed to create a workshop that showed authors how to bring their pirates to life in a realistic way.
Well, since you have so much experience with, you know, history and historical figures, I was just kind of wondering, if you could have dinner with any historical figure, who would it be? Any figure from history, who would it be and why?
Well, I initially thought of two pirates, and then I thought, no. I'm thinking more of it, and the more I thought of it, I thought, I'm going to go with the first person who I considered a heroine. And that's going to date all the way back to when I was in elementary school. And her name is Harriet Tubman.
Oh, right. You go, girlfriend.
And I read a book. I believe it was written by Anne McGovern. And then there was another one I wrote. But I was just so impressed that in spite of her spells of unconsciousness that were brought about after she was hit by an anvil,
mm-hmm.
By the overseer, that she risked her life and her freedom to conduct the slaves along the Underground Railroad so that they could be free.
Mm-hmm.
And she was a spy during the Civil War. And I just found her such a fascinating person.
Definitely, she is. And that was so dangerous for her to do everything that she did. And she was dealing with people who weren't as confident as her. And, you know, they were afraid to go with her. And she had to resort to some extreme measures to make sure that she got everybody safely through.
Yes, and if you ever want to read a good historical novel about her, I think it's Marcy Heidish wrote a book called Moses of Her People, and I really enjoyed that one. And that's an adult.
That's an adult, yes, because there's a lot of children's novels out about her as well. So
right.
I'm glad you said that. So it's by Marcy Heidish.
Yeah, H-E-I-D-I-S-H.
And it's called The Moses of Her People.
Yes. And I mean, I read it probably when I was in high school or college, but really good one.
But history is history, so it doesn't change,
yes.
All right? So it doesn't matter how far ago it was. So, yes, history is history. That's the great thing about it.
Mm-hmm.
So what inspired you to write The Scottish Thistle?
Well, I don't doodle. You know how when you're bored, you tend to doodle on paper? I don't doodle well. My sister got all the art skills. So I was sitting in a boring staff meeting. We had them at least once a month, every Wednesday,
mm-hmm.
and I have no idea what the topic was because I was sitting there writing what became the opening scene of the novel of a rider riding across the moor during a thunderstorm.
Mm-hmm.
And the English teacher was sitting next to me, and she was reading over my shoulder, and she said, "Ooh, you got to write that into a story."
Oh.
But it was, so that's what I did. I started writing the novel then, just as a way to relieve the stress of the environment where I was working, because it was a school for seriously emotionally challenged teenagers.
Wow.
And
that was your stress reliever.
It was. I would come home from school and sit down at the computer, and the only time I got up was either to go have dinner or to go watch one of my regular weekly shows.
Wow. Well, we're glad that you did write it. And once again, for the listeners out there, if you're interested, you can go to Cindy's website, and it's www.cindyvallar.com. And you can learn all about the Scottish Thistle. You can learn everything about it. It's a really wonderful site, too.
Thank you.
So before we let you go, I want to ask you some questions. And this is called 20 Questions. Mm-hmm. So I'm going to ask you a series of questions, and you have to answer with the first thing that comes to mind, okay?
Okay.
So you can't think about it. Just spit it out, all right?
Okay, I've closed my eyes. I can't see anything to affect me. Go ahead.
Okay, we're ready. African safari or Alaskan cruise?
Alaskan cruise.
Bustiers or garter belts?
Garter belts.
Roller skating or ice skating?
Ice skating.
Diamonds or pearls?
Pearls.
New York or Los Angeles?
New York.
Russell Crowe or Mel Gibson?
Russell Crowe.
Clash of the Titans or Odysseus?
I don't know. I've never seen either.
You've never seen Clash of the Titans? Oh, my goodness. You have to put this on your list, Cindy. The old one with Harry Hamlin. It's good. All right. Moving on. Jazz music or classical music?
Jazz.
The Grand Canyon or the Eiffel Tower?
Eiffel Tower.
Okay. Masquerade ball or rodeo?
Rodeo.
Margarita or daiquiri?
I'm sorry. It would be neither. I don't drink.
Okay. All right. Convertible or SUV?
Convertible.
Okay. I know you have to know this. Saturday Night Fever or Grease?
Grease.
Romantic comedy or serious drama?
Romantic comedy.
1970s or 1870s?
1970s.
Steak or catfish?
Steak.
I know your answer on this one. Viking or Victorian?
I'm sorry, the first word was Viking?
Yes.
Viking.
I knew that. Bonanza or Star Trek?
Star Trek.
Okay. Antiques Roadshow or Pawn Stars?
Antiques.
Okay, and the last one is Wuthering Heights or the Titanic?
Titanic.
Okay! Cindy, I'm going to need you to go and rent the Clash of the Titans, all right? And Odysseus, okay. Wonderful Greek mythology. But thank you so much for being a good sport, and thank you for being on the show. We have enjoyed talking with you.
Oh, well, thank you. Thank you for having me.
And everybody, everybody, please remember to go to Cindy's site. It is www.cindyvallar.com. Check out the Scottish Thistle. Check out her site. There's so much knowledge in there. You will be blown away, I promise you. So, all right, Cindy, thank you for having us, allowing us into your life, and you take care and have a good night.
You too. Thank you.
Bye-bye. Bye.